Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You know, Lloyd, just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this. And totally redeem yourself!
Oh, Boston College! So this is what happened. Willie P, by the way, here with you on a Saturday at Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and Radio.com. So Boston College punted from the plus 34, right, on 4th and 1. They got a net of 8 on that drive with the punt, as Clemson got it at their own 26 after the punt. A net of 8. A completely dumb decision. Very dumb. Very bad. Losing decision. Clemson drives all the way down to the plus 3, and I'm seeing the replay now again. Total bad exchange from DJ Uiagalelei and Travis Etienne, and BC gets a scoop and score out of the deal. If that does not tell you that college football has no justice and no conscience right now in 2020, then I need to show you more evidence, because that to me is clear and obvious evidence. Also, in the amount of time it took Randy McMichael to finish a six-pack when he was at UGA, aka 10 minutes and 28 seconds, that's how long it took Kentucky to go through their last offensive drive and come up with a paltry field goal. So I look at that as a win for the Georgia D. I am a little concerned that it took you, 19 plays to get off the field against Kentucky in their building, but it's only a field goal. Again, a lot of people angry about Stetson Bennett right now. People are in their feelings about him. This tweet, by the way, on Twitter, at Willie P Style, from Guardian Geezers, he says, Stetson Bennett and it at quarterback, when are they going to give JT a shot? I say that after it looks like he's just completed a long pass down the left sideline to James Cook. So, encouraging sign with about 2.5 to play in the opening half. But listen, guys, I'm not going to sit here and say I've given up on any other options right now for the Georgia Bulldogs at quarterback, but I have. I really have. And because Jawan Mathis is still with the twos and JT Daniels is with the threes, the JT experiment, in my opinion, they're either saying number one, JT's not it, or JT's not healthy. It's one of those two. And despite the fact that it runs antithetical to anything that Georgia wants to do offensively, they want a conservative quarterback who's not going to turn the football over, and Stetson Bennett is a gunslinger. It doesn't make a lot of sense. But I present to you the fact that Georgia right now has the ball in plus territory with the clock running down in the opening half of the ball game. So we'll see whether or not Georgia can at least get a little bit of arm's length here with the Wildcats. As we mentioned, 21-7 BC leads Clemson, although Clemson is driving now with about 9.5 to play in the second quarter. Coastal Carolina all over Georgia State, 20-0 right now. That game is also midway in the second quarter. Iowa State 13, Kansas 6, West Virginia 10, Kansas State 3, and a little bit of a surprise inside the Big Ten, Michigan State a 14-7 lead midway second quarter at the Big House against the Wolverines. More on the college football slate coming up later on this hour, including the Big Ten's big gamble, at least with Wisconsin, is running a bit of a foul because of the COVID protocols, and also why is a certain team in this conference vilified for no apparent reason? I'm going to take up for a squad that I don't normally take up on, and I really hate you, Wisconsin. I hate you so much because you're going to make me say nice things about a school that I've really never, ever said nice things about. And it's going to make me somewhat angry. But that comes your way in about 50 minutes from right now. We also have the Falcons Saturday walkthrough later on this hour. Stetson Bennett just threw a pick, so that's awesome. Fantastic stuff. Awesome stuff for Georgia. Stetson Bennett just threw a pick. There you go. Awesome. Very happy. I say that, of course, sarcastically. NFL Grounded Pound comes your way right now. Sorry, Ken. I'm just sorry. I'm sorry, Ken. That's what it is. Producer Ken Roundtree. It was off a tip ball, too, from the defensive lineman that Stetson Bennett threw a pick. Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. It was tipped up by the left tipped up by the left tackle there. Oh, well. It's one thing that he's had trouble with over the course of this young season. But we'll keep you updated on that game as we go throughout the day here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Again, we can't give you 100% play-by-play because the pictures, descriptions, and accounts of the game without the express written consent of the NCAA are prohibited. So we will try to keep you updated as much as we possibly can. NFL Week 8 slate. Of course, it got underway on Thursday night with the Falcons' 25-17 win over Carolina. Big matchup inside the AFC North. Two old-time rivals going at it with the Steelers and the Ravens. Head coach Mike Tomlin talking about how his defense has led them to victory sitting right now as one of the only teams, the only team left in the league that's undefeated.
You know, we have a commitment there. You know, if they can't score, you can't lose. And it's the kind of approach that we take. But that commitment goes back to player acquisition, the development of schematics, just the things that, the nuts and bolts things, if you will, when you build your program. I just think good, winning, consistent football, top-notch defense, particularly defense that's stout against the run, is a significant component of that.
They only lost for the Ravens. Not exactly anything to be ashamed about. Of course, they lost to the defending champion Kansas City Chiefs at their lone defeat in the big Lamar versus Mahomes showdown. Game of the week last week, in my mind, was Seattle and Arizona, with Arizona pulling it out. Of course, late against Seattle, and I think a lot of people were surprised by that particular result. Second consecutive week that Seattle has to go inside their own division. They play San Francisco this week. Russell Wilson, though, has faith that his defense will let him down like it did in the final stages last Sunday night.
Yeah, I think their defense can be great. They've been so timely in so many key situations. You know, go back to last week, how the defense stopped them on four straight downs. That was amazing. You know, that's a team effort. Unbelievable, and just they've been timely all year. You know, you think of all the games, you know, down to the wire or whatever it may be. So I think the biggest part is just, you know, us all coming together all at the right time and all meshing together, you know, in terms of the, you know, on the field, we're all meshing together as teammates and all that. But what I mean is that the whole picture comes together all at the same time. That's going to be really special when that happens.
That is a little bit from Russell Wilson. Again, he says it's been good at timely opportunities, but wasn't really timely up when it came to San Francisco. The Saints and the Chicago Bears. We'll see if that paper tiger continues to look like a paper tiger with the Chicago Bears. Didn't look too good against the LA Rams, did they, Hugh Douglas? Just saying. Oh, Hugh's already jumped off the bandwagon when it comes to the Chicago Bears, so it's okay. It's okay. New Orleans Saints, of course, going in without some big offensive weapons again. Michael Thomas will not play once again for New Orleans. Also, Marquez Callaway will not play also for New Orleans. Titans and Bengals. Of course, the Bengals trying to get themselves right after the trade of Carlos Dunlap. Zach Taylor talking about the fact that this is a squad that, when you think about it, has to overcome the fact that they might be in fire sale mode. Of course, the Patriots and the Bills getting you ready for that one. Also, Cam Newton's latest whiz. Remember last week he talked about the excuse bucket? He talked about why exactly things really have no excuse right now when it comes to how much they've had trouble finding success in New England.
Losing is not acceptable in this locker room, in this county, in this state, in this area, in this region. So Cameron Newton, you need to pick your expletive. Oh, that's what I've learned.
Ah, man. You know, I was getting into this conversation with somebody. You know, for some reason, in my mind, Cam Newton makes the Patriots more likable and more root-worthy, at least outside of New England. People in New England are already, like, jumping off of, you know, jumping into the Charles River because of how bad the Patriots are right now. But to me, it's like I look at them and they look more attractive as a as an outside root as long as you don't have any particular rooting interest inside the AFC East. I also find interesting the conversation surrounding the Rams and Dolphins of the first start for Tua Tagovailoa. There was a piece on Pro Football Talk that dealt with maybe this was the plan all along. And I'm sitting here and saying, earth to Florio, earth to the world. I only said this a couple of weeks ago when the bye happened. And they made the decision. I think it was on like a Tuesday or whatever. And I said, hello, this was premeditated. This was always going to happen. Whether Fitzpatrick balled out or whether he was just okay. You don't bring in a guy of that nature and a guy of that ilk and not try him out. Especially when you feel like you are in striking distance for a weaker division. People thought again that the AFC East was going to be dominated by the Bills and the Patriots. It's really only been dominated by the Bills, and Miami is a couple of games back. So because of that, you feel like you can catch lightning in a bottle with Tua. If Tua is anything like he was in college, they feel pretty good about themselves. But in my opinion, I feel like Tua was more of a product of his program. The fact that he had three receivers between Waddle, Ruggs, Devontae Smith, and oh yeah, by the way, a fourth guy in Jerry Jeudy, who's an NFL pro right now. He's never going to have four guys at his at those guys' level relative to their peers at any point in his NFL career, in my opinion. You're not going to get four guys like that relative to their peers who are as good as Smith, Ruggs, Jeudy, and Waddle. 7-3 is a score in favor of Georgia over Kentucky right now as they get ready for halftime at Kroger Field in Lexington. We'll recap what we've seen so far from that one, also the rest of the college football slate. And I'm going to praise a school I don't normally give praise to because I feel like they're doing something that's getting largely vilified, and I feel like that's unfair. Willie P is in the building. Love to hear from you as well. 404-741-0929 on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and Radio.com. Willie P is in a building, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I want to hear from dog fans right now. 404-741-0929. I want to hear if you have any fingernails left. What a disgusting situation you got going on right now in Lexington. And look, I don't want to use one half of football to completely pound against Kirby Smart. But the one thing that I've always wondered, and again, he's put in that same little box that all these former Saban assistants are, whether it's Jimbo, whether it's Muschamp, whether it's Jeremy Pruitt, Kiffin, McElwain, all these guys who, by the way, none of them have ever beat Saban head-to-head. And I feel like Belichick kind of gets this same type of reputation, although there has been some marginal success from some former Belichick assistants, but never anything on the highest level. So many of these programs, and to an extension, of course, NFL teams, try to replicate the success of Saban and Belichick with branches off of them. You can't use a branch to plant another tree. You just can't. There's no cross-pollination there. Because the thing that I've noticed about all these guys, even Mark D'Antonio and Bobby Williams, who were at Michigan State with him, none of these guys, with the exception of Jameis at Florida State with Jimbo, have ever had a quarterback come play for them that is exemplary enough to win you a college football playoff. And while the Georgia defense, which has played better today, I do believe that there is something to be said about the fact that you let Kentucky hold the ball for almost two-thirds of an entire quarter. Granted, you got off the field and got a field goal, but that's something also incredibly glaring as well when you're known as a defensive guy. 404-741-0929 is how you get in touch with me, Willie P, not only on the phones, but on the Solomon Brothers Diamond text lines. A lot of people angry about, you know, the fact that it's Stetson Bennett quarterback and not Justin Fields, and also picking Fromm over Fields. Again, we've done that argument. We've done that conversation. I don't want to relitigate that whole situation. But what separates Kirby Smart from Jeremy Pruitt? What separates Kirby Smart from Jimbo Fisher? What separates Kirby Smart from Will Muschamp right now? In my opinion, and this is a hot take, they're all the same guy, with the exception of the fact that Kirby has got a better program history to recruit from, especially a recent history. And you've got a more fertile recruiting ground to get from. You can get better players. You've got guys across the offensive line who would be the envy of anybody in college football. You've got more defensive talent than anybody in college football right now encompassing. But whether it's in-game management or the lack of ability to get an adequate quarterback, those are characteristics that are personified by all the gentlemen that I just referenced. Jimbo, Pruitt, Muschamp. All of them have the same marks against them. Jimbo's got a program with untapped financial resources. They paid him $7.5 million a year to come there and have money left in the bank. And yet they can't recruit to the level where they compete in this conference, especially in the SEC West. Kirby recruits better than anybody, but not at quarterback, at least to this point. We'll see what Brock Vandergriff is next year and beyond. We'll see if he's the kind of player that can transcend the Georgia program and turn it away from what we're looking at right now, which is 7-3 against Kentucky. This is Kentucky, fam. This is not even Tennessee. This is Kentucky, guys. You should be winning by more than a 7-3 score at halftime. You were favored in this game by 17. I know I sound like I had money on the game. I didn't. But I'm just saying, like, that's where I'm at right now. Unbelievable. Boston College also, by the way, still up 21-10, approaching 2 minutes to play in the opening half. Clemson's defense is in trouble, folks. Clemson does not have adequate defense right now, and they also have a big problem when it comes to running it in at short yardage, because they've been getting no push when it comes to short yardage. It's part of the reason why you had the bad exchange and the fumble return for touchdown on the bad exchange from DJ Uiagalelei and Travis Etienne that produced the Eagles' latest touchdown. And Mr. Yurkovich, while he's only thrown 11 passes, has looked rather good against Clemson's D. It's not Uiagalelei's fault. 16 of 19, 180, and a touchdown so far for him. So it's not as if the absence of Trevor Lawrence is what's hurting the Clemson Tigers, but it's a situation and scenario right now playing out in Clemson, South Carolina, that looks rather precarious for a team that currently sits at number one in the country. It is, by the way, 3 years and 15 days to the date of Clemson's last ACC defeat that took place against Syracuse at Syracuse. You got to go a season back further for their last home loss. That came against Pittsburgh when the aptly named kicker by the name of Blewett didn't blow it and kicked the game-winning field goal for the Panthers against Clemson. And whenever Clemson loses at home, it also brings about the very awkward fact of the whole gather at the paw scenario, because they like to rush the field and gather at the paw in the middle of the field. Yeah, they were gathering at the paw even though they lost the football game. So anytime that happens with a home defeat for Clemson, it's always a rather weird thing for people who don't see it on a normal basis for them to actually come in and digest. Other games across the college football landscape, Cincinnati leads Memphis 21-7. Still Michigan State beating Michigan 14-10. I admittedly have not been on that one just because all the other games that are going on across the country, but I might have to tap into the Spartans and Wolverines when it comes into the second half. Big surprise for Chris Klieman's K-State group. They are down on the road at Mountaineer Stadium in Morgantown, 23-3 in favor of West Virginia right now, approaching halftime in the second quarter. It's Iowa State 20, Kansas 7, also in the Big 12 Conference. Coastal Carolina comfortably up on Georgia State, 34-0. Coastal Carolina aiming to go 6-0 on the season, 4-0 in the Sun Belt Conference. Later on today, it's Notre Dame taking on Georgia Tech. We talked earlier in the show with Ken Segura of the AJC, who covers the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets. Unfortunately for Georgia Tech, their season malaise has largely been self-induced. When you think about 52 penalties committed in the six games they've played, that's about almost nine per game. That's not necessarily the avenue you want to live in, especially with a young squad. They also right now, in the turnover margin, are minus seven. That is something that head coach Jeff Collins wants to try and rectify, especially if they want to get an upset win against number four Notre Dame this afternoon at Bobby Dodd Stadium.
We can work on our snaps every single day, even more and more and more, and we do. That's part of the very first thing that we do when we come out here to practice. Kelly, you've been here. Rod, you've been here. Ken, you've been here. The very first thing we do every single day, rattle out of the box, is quarterback center exchanges. First thing we do every single day, and we'll continue to do that as we continue to build this program to a ridiculously high level. So it's part of our process. Had an errant snap. Things happen. We've got to learn from them. We've got to get better.
10 interceptions by Jeff Sims, 8 fumbles lost. That's what he's talking about when it comes to the quarterback exchange. Again, minus 7 in the turnover margin. And, you know, nothing that you've seen before today gives you any optimism for their game against Georgia Tech today, against Notre Dame today. But if anything, if they can have a better showing today against Clemson than they did against Clemson, I should say, that could give you at least a building block for the final four games of the season. Why is Nebraska getting so much crap from people because they wanted to play a game against Wisconsin, other than the one they had scheduled against Wisconsin? Wisconsin had 22 positive COVID tests, okay? Had nothing to do with Nebraska. And the Big Ten even was like, we didn't necessarily want to cancel the game. Wisconsin canceled the game. And yet everyone's saying, oh, Nebraska is a danger to the Big Ten. Nebraska is not following the rules. Nebraska just wants to play, man. It's not their fault that Wisconsin didn't take care of their business. It's not their fault the virus is running rampant in Madison and through that state. Nebraska wanted to play an FCS game against Chattanooga. And I understand the testing practices when it comes to Chattanooga are not at the level that the Big Ten has. But guess what? I'm pretty sure if that was a situation that was keeping them from playing the game, Nebraska would foot the bill because they care about football there in Lincoln. And if they could foot the bill for some daily testing for a week for Chattanooga, and Chattanooga's willing to strap it up and take the medicine, they'd be all for it. But everyone's saying, oh, Nebraska's a bad fit for the Big Ten. Kick Nebraska out of the Big Ten. They don't know what they're doing. Look, you, the Big Ten, didn't know what you were doing by delaying this long to play a rigid season where Wisconsin had one game canceled and possibly is in danger of another being canceled with Purdue on Tuesday. We'll find out on Tuesday whether or not that game gets played. But to heck with you, Big Ten, for being so self-righteous and having this disconnect with your ADs and coaches on one side wanting to play and your academic people who feel like you've had your feet held to the fire because you don't know what the heck's going on when it comes to keeping yourself in check. I understand the risks of playing because of this virus. It's not easy. It takes a lot of money and a lot of discipline from a lot of folks. But 3 of the Power 5 conferences have figured it out. What's to say why you can't? And that's why this particular experiment from the Big Ten is ridden with folly, in my opinion. And Nebraska should not be getting any flack because of this. And they also got screwed on the schedule, too, having to play right away against Ohio State and have a daunting schedule right off the bat. You think that wasn't by accident?
Oh, no, that was 100% planned.
Think that wasn't by accident? Willie P, Ken Roundtree, by the way, in our Midtown Atlanta studios with the chiming in, of course. And, of course, we'd love to hear from you, 404-741-0929. Falcons Saturday walkthrough comes your way next. How conflicted are you as a Falcons fan? I know I am by watching this team. I'll explain coming up next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and Radio.com. Second half underway in Lexington with Georgia driving. Thanks to a long pass completed by Stetson Bennett. I know, it's a rarity today. That's good, though. we see progress. Like, that's the thing. Like, I hate treating Georgia like it's a child learning to walk, okay? Like, Stetson Bennett is 5 of 8, and most of it came on that last pass to Washington, 33-yard catch. He was 4 of 7 at the break for less than 100 yards. So, again, I hate trying to say things like baby steps for this Georgia offense, but to me, like, this shouldn't be what you have as a standard. The standard should be a lot greater than this. They say best is the standard at Clemson. They're getting blown out right now, 28-13. Well, not blown out, I guess. It's Boston College is in control, 28-13. Clemson added a field goal right there at the end of the half, but we gave you a little bit of a descriptor on how Boston College was moving with things. So I told you about the fact that Joe Tessitore's kid is the backup kicker at Boston College. John Tessitore, as the backup kicker, lined up as the holder, and then they basically motioned into a formation to try and fake a field goal, and John Tessitore under center helped draw Clemson's defense offside. Then Yurkovich throws a touchdown pass on the next play to put BC up 28-10. Again, it's 28-13 right now as they go into half, but an amazing sequence for BC and about as perfect a half as you can play against the number one team in the country who finds themselves on the ropes. Again, it hasn't been the freshman quarterback DJ Uiagalelei's fault. He's been 19-26 today for 222 and a score. Travis Etienne, the inability to run the football, I feel like has been the big bugaboo for Clemson. 11 carries, 28 yards for Etienne, including a fumble on the goal line that turned into a scoop and score for BC. Little Falcons Saturday walkthrough right now. Normally, this would be a preview of what we would see tomorrow, but the fact that we have a situation right now where Falcons beat Carolina Panthers on Thursday night, and they have a couple of extra days, to get ready for the next opponent with the Denver Broncos. That gives us a little bit more time to reflect on not only what we saw Thursday, but where we sit right now at the halfway point. 2-6, not where anybody wanted to be, certainly, and I also feel that when it comes to judging this team, you have to judge the whole, but I also feel like you have to judge the pre-Raheem Morris era and the current Raheem Morris era, because that 0-5 team, I want to say it's emblematic of the entire situation and the entire problem, but that's not fair to Raheem Morris. Because you have seen some marked differences in the last three games, even though one of those games was a loss. You did see some struggles on the defensive side and struggles when it came to the end of halves. But I do feel like the Falcons find themselves in a much better scenario now than they did, at least when Dan Quinn was fired after the first loss to Carolina. Now, this team is always going to be offensively oriented, but they need to be better on defense. I know all the money's on offense. We've talked about that. That's one of my big proponents. But defensive pressure and defensive presence has always needed to be the place where this team ended up improving. I think they did that in a certain way against Carolina to start 2 days ago. And one of the reasons is because they're starting to blitz a lot more. Deion Jones is a big part of that, and it's something Raheem Morris emphasized when he spoke to the media following the Falcons' 25-17 win over the Panthers.
We talked about it this offseason on virtual, but when we got to camp and we were able to emphasize some of the things with Deion blitzing, he was able to get with Adam Durde and get to do some things on as far as rush moves and approaching the back because he is so fast. He has so much speed. You know, people last year were kind of sliding the protections to Dre and kind of ignoring Deion a little bit towards the end. And then we started to blitz him a little bit, and he got some free runs. So now he won't get as many free runs, but he will get some backs. And when you get a chance to get on some backs, you know, we like to see him win some of those one-on-one battles. And what's been happening in the last couple of games or so is he's been winning some of those one-on-one battles. He's been getting some free runs. And with his speed and his athleticism, he can certainly run down quarterbacks and create a problem for people.
That's Falcons interim coach Raheem Morris. Again, that's part of the reason why I was angry about not retaining Devondre Campbell, because I feel like even if you couldn't get Devondre Campbell free, he was part of the reason why Deion Jones had a lot of free reign. And now that Deion's a focal point, that basically means there's one less guy on that side of the football that the offense has to circle. One of the things that Hugh Douglas and I talk about a lot on the Wade Ford Tailgate Show is whether or not you can account for the guys that you have circled in red pen on the opposite side of the football on defense. Right now, the Falcons have two of those guys, in my opinion. Grady Jarrett's one of them. Deion Jones is the other. Dante Fowler is not that guy. Tack McKinley's not that guy. I think Keanu Neal, when he's playing his best, can be that guy. But the only time we've seen him play his best this season, I would argue, was two nights ago against Carolina. Keanu had his best game. And it was the best consistent pass rush they had all season, a lot of it due to him. But I do feel like those are the only three guys you really have to account for if you're an opposing offense. And that's a big problem for me if you're wanting to have any kind of success over the final eight games of the season, because the post-bye schedule for the Atlanta Falcons is treacherous. Two games apiece against the Saints and Buccaneers. A game at Kansas City against the defending champions. Justin Herbert, who will have some more time underneath him later on in this season, he has played very, very well. Team around him has not, but he's played very, very well. The only game that looks like one who you feel rather comfortable with is the game against the Raiders. But even so, I think the Raiders are a better football team than them. And that's something right now. I don't look at any of these final eight games as any that they're going to be favored in. Maybe you're favored against in the game against Vegas because you're home. But you're not going to be favored in either Saints game. You're not going to be favored in Los Angeles against the Chargers. You will not be favored in either of the Bucs games. And you certainly won't be favored against the Chiefs. So part of the thing that you have to do is you have to be better assignment correct on defense, and you need to make guys have to be accounted for more on that side of the football. AJ Terrell has to become one of those guys you circle. You don't have DeMonte KZ, he can't be a guy you circle because he's on the bench. Whether Kendall Sheffield turns into one of those guys, maybe he turns into a guy you have to circle, but that's the biggest problem right now for the Falcons. On a positive note, though, you won a game ugly. I didn't think you had that in you going into the game. I felt like the only avenue to victory for the Falcons in this or any game this season was a game where you completely outplayed your opponent. I don't think they completely outplayed the Carolina Panthers on Thursday night, but I do feel like they did enough things right to get the victory. The fact that you had a team driving on the final possession like you've had in a couple of other scenarios this season, and you actually toughened up and got an interception from Bleedy Ray Wilson, is a sign of progress. But I do feel like it also was playing with fire. And a lot of Falcon fans, and believe me, I was texting back and forth with coworkers and friends down the stretch of that football game, and everyone was like, here we go again. Here we go again. I've seen this movie before. I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that Teddy Bridgewater was less than 100%. Got a little lucky. Again, you kind of created that. But I also feel like the guy who created that injury is somebody who we have to kind of call into question right now. And that's, of course, Dante Fowler. Whether it's Fowler with the trip and then Harris with the really kind of Bush League hit, helmet to helmet, was late. I wouldn't put it in the classless term, but it definitely was one where it was not needed, especially with that particular contact scenario. Dante Fowler has been an immense disappointment. Immense disappointment. And we now have a large enough sample size. And I talked about this too on the Tailgate Show. I don't know if it's scheme or if it's just simple fact that he's now somebody who teams find it easy to account for. He's not winning one-on-one battles. And a lot of the reason why I think he's not winning one-on-one battles is because he's coming at from a very wide technique. He's running what they call a nine technique. He is outside of where even a tight end wing would be to try and get a full running start to rush the passer. And it's very, very easy for an offensive lineman to adjust to that unless you have the kind of moves that can get you past a guy. And usually Fowler has those moves. He has the spin move in his arsenal. He has the ability to get around guys in his repertoire. But he's either getting chipped at the line of scrimmage by a running back or a tight end, or somehow other way distracted or disrupted on his way to the quarterback. And as a result of that, he's not been able to adjust.
Hey, Will. Hey, I look at.
But I'm on there. I was going to chime in for a minute.
Sure.
Him being out wide like that, if you notice the defensive line with the two ends being out wide, that's also letting the running back run up the middle on the Falcons' defensive line. If you've seen it throughout the Carolina game.
Sure.
Whenever they're out wide like that, they would immediately get Mike Davis and run at the middle for like 6-7 yards every time. When they're in tight is when they're better against the run.
Sure, absolutely. And again, that's the part of this defense that I find so perplexing when they play that particular scheme, because the one thing that when you play what's called, again, the wide nine technique, and again, this is getting very, very deep in the weeds and X's and O's, and I'm not trying to do that because I don't want to try to talk down to people, but the problem is that the modus operandi of that defense is all about gap control and rushing the quarterback. And that's something, again, those are two principles with that defense that the Falcons have been terrible on. It's had the reverse effect. It's made teams be able to shoot gaps and get easy stuff up the middle and get time to throw. It's having the absolute worst effect, or reverse effect, I should say, than its intended principles. And that's part of the reason why the Falcons defense has struggled so much over the course of this young season. And really, it's emblematic of the entire Dan Quinn and beyond era, because it's the same problems I saw last year when I saw games in person. After seeing the Detroit game in person, I saw the exact same things I saw last year and the year before. And it's not something that is a very easy thing to fix with this current personnel and with the scheme that you're playing. We'll keep you an update of what's going on with Georgia and Kentucky. They've scored another touchdown, and they're playing defense currently. We'll give you an update there. Also, Clemson and everything else on what's happening. We'll talk more about this Falcons defensive dilemma with Jarvis Davis in about a half hour's time. Willie P is in the building. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, online, radio.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.